Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems, we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not so common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and am the author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology and direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today we are devoting our show to the subject of polycystic ovarian syndrome. My guest today is Christine Desarne, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association, which can be accessed at pcosupport.org. Joining us later in the show is culinary expert Noreen Gillis and co-author of the PCOS Diet Cookbook, Delicious Recipes and Tips for Women with PCOS on the Low GI Diet. So, Christine, welcome. Let's start with you and start at the beginning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I guess what I want to get into is what exactly is PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome, and who has it but doesn't know it yet?
Well, you know, that's one of the most important questions to ask when it comes to polycystic ovary syndrome or polycystic ovarian syndrome. We hear it, both terms being used to describe it. Unfortunately, the description polycystic ovarian syndrome throws most of the people that hear this term off the track immediately, because it seems to focus on a gynecological kind of condition, but it's actually an endocrine condition. In other words, it has to do with the hormones and the balance of hormones in a woman's body. And unfortunately for some women, those hormones are thrown off balance, and they're all very, very sensitive and interactive, as you may know, especially in a woman's body, with the sensitivities of the menstrual cycle. So what we think happens is that too much insulin in the system, in a woman's system, or insulin that doesn't work the way it should, creates a situation where the other hormones in her body are thrown off balance. And these include the hormones that regulate the menstrual cycle, such as LH and FSH, as well as male hormones, what we know as male hormones, like testosterone and some of the other hormones out there that affect some of the physical symptoms that women with PCOS experience.
So just to backtrack, women with PCOS have insulin resistance, which is sort of a predecessor, sort of like a precondition or pre-diabetes condition. And they basically, you think that this is what comes first. It's not the other way around. In other words, it's the insulin resistance that throws everything off, rather than cysts on the ovaries or an interruption in the female hormone flow that causes the other conditions.
Well, that's actually the case. However, there's a cyclical component to this as well, because as the ovaries begin to thicken as a result of the insulin resistance, that actually creates more male hormone in a woman's body, which then creates a cascade of events that lead to greater insulin resistance. So it is a cyclical chicken and egg situation, and there is some debate as to what comes first, but the general rule of thought within the medical community is that underlying insulin resistance and high levels of insulin really are really where it all starts.
And that seems to be, it seems to be that, it seems like a breakthrough came sometime in the late 90s regarding this. Is that right?
Well, there was plenty of research prior to the late 90s. However, it really all came together as a recognized fact at that point, that treatment for insulin resistance resulted in treatment for PCOS.
Yeah, so that they started putting women on, they began to treat the insulin resistance, and lo and behold, everything else began to fall into place.
That's exactly right.
Rather than the other way around. So the polycystic part of polycystic ovarian syndrome, does that not mean that small cysts form on the ovary?
Well, technically, yes. However, it's very important to note what those cysts really are. When the hormones that control a woman's cycle are disrupted, what happens is ovulation, the whole process of ovulation itself can be halted. And each time an ovulation would have occurred during a woman's cycle, instead of that ovulation actually taking place, the egg may not release. And what that tiny little cyst really is an arrested follicle, a follicle that contained, or still contains in some cases, an egg that has not matured or been released. And over time, those follicles tend to accumulate. And on an ultrasound, it looks like a series of tiny little cysts around the ovary. Now, if a woman is taking a birth control pill that has polycystic ovary syndrome, she may not develop the actual ovarian cysts or that actual sign on the ultrasound, but that doesn't mean that she doesn't have PCOS.
I see. Okay. And is it we've established that PCOS is essentially a condition of insulin resistance that messes up the female hormonal system and cycle to the point where male hormone secretions are made and too much of it is made. Is that correct?
That's correct. And all of these hormones play off of each other and interact. And the hormones testosterone and DHEAS, for example, are, we call them male hormones, and all women have them in their body in lower amounts than you would normally find in a man. But in women with PCOS, those hormones are elevated much higher than they would normally be for a woman.
Okay, and that leads to certain characteristics that some women, I understand that not all of them, but some women with PCOS exhibit, and I'm wondering if you can tell me what does a woman with PCOS look like?
Well, it's a good. It's good to note that there are some differences and there is variation here. And because this is a syndrome, not all women exhibit all the same symptoms. But many women with PCOS experience facial hair and hair all over the body in places that may not normally be associated with a female hair pattern.
Okay.
Another symptom could be what we know as alopecia or a female pattern of hair loss. And that occurs differently from a male pattern, where we have more of a circular bald spot, if you will.
Right.
Female hair loss is usually a thinning of the hair all over the scalp. But both hirsutism, or the development of facial and body hair, as well as alopecia, can be triggered by too much testosterone, and particularly too much free testosterone in a woman's system. So what's interesting about that, too, is that most women don't associate those types of symptoms as being medical in nature. They often think of them as being cosmetic and sometimes hide hirsutism, especially from their own doctor.
So it's often very difficult to spot it. The question is, too, is could a woman walk around for, throughout her 20s and 30s without exhibiting any signs of PCOS, then as she approaches middle age, more middle age, not to say that 40 is middle age, but, you know, as we get older, it becomes more difficult sometimes to lose weight, and as we develop sort of adiposity around the middle, is it possible that, which can lead to insulin resistance, then she can become insulin resistant and then all of a sudden starts noticing all the other characteristics of PCOS. Is that a possibility to sort of sprout it later in life?
That is a possibility, and we have heard anecdotally many stories of women who belong to our support group who have had exactly that experience.
I see.
Many women have the onset, in fact, the more likely onset or the more prevalent onset from what we have we understand from the doctors doing the research on PCOS today is that the onset does usually occur during younger during a younger time in a woman's life. But on the other hand, when we look at the general symptoms of menopause, we see that some of these symptoms arise at that time. And whether those symptoms are connected to PCOS, to the insulin resistance or not, is not entirely clear, but it certainly is the case that that has been the experience of some women, where the onset of these symptoms have coincided with the development of insulin resistance.
So what kinds of diagnostic tests could a woman get that would absolutely confirm that she has PCOS?
Well, keep in mind that it's not a disease. We don't have one set of tests that can always tell us everything that we need to know. But the easiest way to determine that PCOS may be the culprit is to take a look at the hormones in a woman's body. And first of all, women with PCOS are at about 5 times the baseline risk of developing diabetes. And in fact, some doctors say it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing a woman should do if she suspects she has PCOS is to be tested for diabetes to see if her disease has progressed. But assuming that that's not been the case, one test that can quickly identify any hormonal imbalances would be a test that would measure LH, luteinizing hormone, FSH, follicle. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Christine, I'm sorry. We're gonna have to take a break now. My guest is Christine DeZarn, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association. For more information on PCOS, you can visit PCOsupport.org. If you're considering treatment for PCOS, which we'll get into, we suggest starting with a low glycemic index diet and the PCOS Diet Cookbook. The book is authored by PCOS expert Dr. Nadir Farid and culinary expert Noreen Gillis. When we come back, we'll talk more about diagnostic tests for PCOS as well as symptoms. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Every Monday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time, tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis. Pat will interview authors and experts in the field of alternative and traditional medicine and discuss current issues. Accurate information will be provided, beliefs and practices will be shared, and listener questions will be answered. This show is about helping educate listeners to become empowered so that they can make informed choices regarding their physical, spiritual, and emotional health. So tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis and learn more about your healthcare options. Only on the world's elite health station, your life, your health, your network, Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, this is Mark Victor Hansen. You know me for Chicken Soup of the Soul, the 1 Minute Millionaire, and Cracking the Millionaire Code. And what I want you to know is that if you want to have rip-roaringly good health, listen to Health Crusades by my friend John Farley.
Tune in to Health Crusades with John Farley every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America Health and Wellness. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Sex on the Wednesday Afternoon with Sierra Gunn. Sex on the Wednesday Afternoon is an entertaining and enlightening look at sex, its joys, and its many challenges. With its focus on the causes and effects of sexual dysfunction, Sex on the Wednesday Afternoon explores such related topics as infertility, menopause, sexual enhancement drugs, and their natural alternatives. Listeners are invited to call in and ask questions, relate their experiences, and give their opinions to the host, her guests, and to the medical doctors co-hosting the show. With tens of millions of people worldwide affected by loss of libido, and with 30 million adult American men suffering from some form of erectile dysfunction, this show offers important information and, most of all, hope. It is the aspiration of this program to assist men and women with definitive sexual challenges in their search for empathy, peace of mind, and possible solutions to their problems. So tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Sex on a Wednesday Afternoon with Sierra Gunn on Your Health, Your Life, Your Network, Voice America Health and Wellness.
We all want to improve the environment, but not all of us are willing to make radical changes in our lifestyle to help. If you're one of the millions of people who want to change the world without changing your life, tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman. The Lazy Environmentalist is about easily and effortlessly greening our modern lifestyles without ever sacrificing style. Host Josh Dorfman will bring together designers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are rapidly making the modern green lifestyle a reality. So help your world and help yourself by listening to The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. It's your right and sole purpose to live a joyful life of abundant love, health, and prosperity. Be positive with Nurse Crilly. We'll introduce you to the idea of a positive outlook and how it impacts every aspect of your life, your mind, your body, and your spirit. Each show will look at some aspect of life that is less than satisfying and how you can make it better by challenging and changing your thoughts, your core beliefs, and your feelings. It is possible for you to get out of a negative cycle of being and get into a positive cycle of being. You're invited to take a positively enlightening journey with Be Positive and Nurse Crilly every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness. It's good for what ails you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health and our discussion of PCOS with Christine Desarne, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association. So, Christine, just before we left off for the break, I had rudely cut you off. You were in the process of discussing some of the diagnostic tests for PCOS, and if we can continue with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I started to talk about the test that tests that can look at the level of hormones that generally control a woman's menstrual cycle. And one test that kind of gives us a sign of PCOS is to take a look at the level of FSH, or follicle-stimulating hormone, and LH, or luteinizing hormone. If you're not sure what those are, how to pronounce them, that's okay. But they should roughly be equal to each other, not exactly equal, but a 1-to-1 ratio. But if you start to see a 3-to-1 ratio of the LH to the FSH and get up into those imbalances, we know that there's some stuff going on there that's not quite right. But a more definitive test is probably to look at the testosterone level that's in a woman's body. And keep in mind, when the normal levels of these hormones were calculated by the different labs out there that measure these hormones, they didn't exclude women with PCOS, the nearly 10% of women that have it, when they came up with those numbers. So it's very important for women and their doctors to look at the actual numbers and to note that a high normal value of testosterone, both total testosterone and free testosterone, doesn't necessarily mean that things are okay, since that normal range included those with the PCOS condition.
I see. Okay. And it's my understanding, just from other discussions I've had with experts on sort of androgen access, that we don't have really great, we don't really have sort of tables to tell us what is normal in terms of testosterone levels for women and ages and that sort of thing either.
And we don't. That's really true. And also, just this very term itself of normal means within a certain range of the norm. And because there are so many women that have a condition like PCOS that is very prevalent, quite frankly, it does fall. These hormone levels do fall within the norm at times. And then we don't have any more sensitive tests that go deeper into the underlying issues that can be administered without a great deal of expense.
Yeah, so it gets so basically the diagnostic tests include first of all being tested for diabetes because women are at such high risk who have PCOS if they have insulin resistance, checking hormone levels, and what is the if there is a textbook sort of lab value. What are the kinds of information that the lab test will tell a woman who is a walking textbook case?
Well, I can't give you an actual numeric amount
okay.
for that at this point.
But high levels of what, low levels of what, those kinds of things?
Well, it's interesting. High levels of free testosterone, there are two kinds of testosterone that can be tested. There's a bound testosterone and a free testosterone. And what's interesting is a number of us that have PCOS have noted that our levels of regular testosterone, or total testosterone, if you will, do fall within what is basically considered a high, mid to high normal range. But when our free testosterone, which may not be tested if you don't ask your doctor specifically to test for that as well. Free testosterone often goes over the edge, over into the high range and does not fall within the normal range of most of the labs that are out there.
What about estrogen?
Interesting.
How will that read?
Well, you know, there are different, well, this is something that I didn't know until I began to really research PCOS, but there are different types of estrogen. And one of those types is called estradiol, another is estrone, and there are several other byproducts of estrogen. It is a very sensitive type of hormone to measure because it does change very rapidly even throughout the day, as I understand it in many women.
Yes.
So it's hard to get a read on those. But generally, women with PCOS, because they're not ovulating normally, don't get necessarily reach normal levels of estradiol, but they often have high levels of a version of estrogen called estrone.
And I see. Okay.
That can affect a woman's skin and, of course, other kinds of manifestations in her body.
I see. Well, Christine, what I'm curious about is maybe you can tell us how you came to form the organization that you founded, and I'm assuming that that you must have had a bit of a frustrating experience yourself, which led you to to start a support group. That's usually the story.
I sure did. You know, PCOSA was truly born out of frustration. You know, my frustration and that of some others that had similar experiences. At the age of 27, I developed all of the classic symptoms of PCOS and the insulin resistance that underlies it. I rapidly gained weight, 70 pounds very quickly, over the course of about 9 months, without changing my diet or exercise habits. I developed hair on my chin and my cheeks.
Cheeks, wow.
Yeah, places on my body that I won't mention on your show today right now. But honestly, that women need to know is not just a cosmetic issue or something that your laser technician can get rid of and that it's gone forever. There's actually a reason that that happened, and it's a medical reason. But I had tried to conceive and was unable to get pregnant, and all these things happened at once, but they didn't seem to be related to me. Yet I had gone to several different doctors. I had cystic acne breakouts at the same time. So I went to a dermatologist I went to a fertility specialist because I was having difficulty conceiving. And, of course, my general practitioner told me to lose weight. He just commanded me. You know, you're gaining too much weight. You need to lose it. Of course, I couldn't understand why I was gaining it. But in the end, after 11 different doctors of differing disciplines looked at me and tried to treat my infertility with very expensive drugs and in vitro fertilization, even that far, I still had no diagnosis of PCOS, even though I presented the classic symptoms.
Now, how many years ago was this that you got that you went through this?
That spanned from now you're going to know my age.
Oh, sorry. But was this in other words, was this before? I mean, we obviously know a lot more now, and I'm wondering is this also as a result of your advocacy?
Well, I don't want to take too much credit, but I will take some for that because that was and remains the objective of the organization. I began to look for information on PCOS when I randomly happened across or stumbled across the symptoms on a fertility website online in an online community back in 1996. And when I went to look for materials and books on the subject, I found one paragraph in a women's health book in the local Barnes & Noble, and I found basically a bunch of medical studies through a friend's subscription who was a medical student in Michigan. She gave me her password for Medline. So I had very, very scientific and really nothing for the lay person, nothing for those of us who are wondering what's happening to our bodies. So I began to explore and bring people together to talk about PCOS, to talk about the symptoms, and went so far as to call and speak with the researchers that were on those Medline studies. And many of them are very involved with our organization today, as a matter of fact.
And I know I know that Dr. Ricardo Aziz is definitely, I mean, he just started a professional organization called the Androgen Excess Society, and he does a lot of PCOS research. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we had him on for a hirsutism show, and it's amazing how many shows we've had where PCOS crops up. So,
no pun intended.
Yeah. But basically, It seems like a lot of people were working in silos on different aspects of PCOS, and things started to come together around the late 90s. That's what that's what I recall, that it used to be sort of more of an isolated thing that wasn't, you know, people weren't connecting it to insulin resistance, and then suddenly there were all these connections and connect the dots.
I think that that's absolutely the case. And an interesting phenomenon has been that back in the very late 90s, we were actually recognized as being the first online patient support group. In other words, the first patient support organization that started on the Internet.
Really?
Yeah, there were many different organizations that began to expand from existing organizations onto the Internet. But we actually started and were born on the Internet as a nonprofit organization, which is kind of backwards. And then we also used Internet-based tools to empower the members of our community to help educate their doctors, which is kind of a reverse of the way things used to be, and to be able to take some fully accredited documentation to your physician and share that with him or her is not something that would have happened 10 years ago.
No, and it does seem we do a lot of work. We're going to have to come back, and I'll tell you more about where we do a lot of work. We're going to take a break now. My guest is Christine Desarn, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association. For more information on PCOS, you can visit pcosupport.org. If you're considering treatment for PCOS, we suggest starting with a low glycemic index diet and the PCOS Diet Cookbook. The book is authored by PCOS expert Dr. Nadir Farid and culinary expert Noreen Gillis. When we come back, we'll talk more about insulin resistance and a low GI diet. Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For more information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com.
All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health and our discussion of PCOS with Christine Desarne, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association. When we left off, we were just talking about the interesting reversal of patients educating their doctors and how an organization PCOSA. I'm becoming dyslexic in my old age. And how that organization has helped that occur. And what I wanted to just mention is that this seems to follow the pattern of many orphan diseases, where it's really the patients that begin to almost ignite the interest of practitioners in researching more about a disease. And what could we say that PCOS is more of is it more of a orphan disease or is it more of a stigma disease?
Well, you know, it's a little of both. It's a little of a stigma disease in some respects because it's not a sexy disease to have. It's not a sexy condition, I should say. And we don't find a lot of spokespeople from the celebrity community wanting to come forward and say that they have this condition, which causes them to have to go through laser or hair treatment on their face, et cetera. And infertility, of course, is a very personal condition. But I think more importantly, there's no drug out there that is indicated for PCOS. And the main insulin sensitizers that are on the market today are beyond their patent stage. So we don't see a lot of research driving interest in and of itself within the drug community, the pharmaceutical community. But we do see research in areas like exercise and lifestyle that help to improve overall health. And that's very helpful, but it's a little harder to get funding sometimes for those types of studies. So as we kind of move forward, we're seeing they are being driven by the patients. They're not necessarily being driven by the medical community. And in some cases, we're actually cutting into the revenues of some of the fertility centers when we can get results from exercise programs and effective low glycemic index diets. And in some cases, resume menstrual cycles and fertility in women who were otherwise having difficulty. That does impinge a little bit upon some of the practices out there. Not to say that those physicians would not certainly want to treat the patients in the way that's best for them, but it's a little bit counterintuitive to the fertility industry at times.
Right. But, I mean, for example, with the diabetes, I mean, we call, like, the diabetes, diabetes drugs, it's sometimes known as the diabetes industry. And I think that there really aren't any diabetes practitioners, for example, that wouldn't first encourage lifestyle changes to help, you know, and for example, I think PCOS, because of the insulin resistance and because of what it has in common with people who have diabetes, the low GI diet seems to be sort of the diet of choice.
I agree with you 100%.
For good reason. When did you start to notice the interest in the low GI diet as a lifestyle alteration for women with PCOS?
Well, in the early formation of the organization, I noticed that a couple of the popular book authors at the time, one of them being Barry Sears, the author of the Zone book, that kind of served as a catalyst, if nothing else, for many of the low glycemic or at least the glycemic index type of diets.
Right.
He took an interest initially and I think got the ball rolling with the organization. In fact, he was a speaker at our very first conference.
I see.
And we had a lot of anecdotal experience within the group, and I think that caused a lot of chatter amongst the patient community, and that caused just a call for more research on these types of treatments that include the lifestyle, both diet and exercise.
See, even in the diabetes community, for example, the American Diabetes Association was very slow to kind of move into the low GI diet as an option, because they sort of had their own meal planning or sort of exchange system, and so it seems like it started to really be more of a grassroots movement where it suddenly began to change people's health for the better with all kinds of conditions.
Well, we talk about, in fact, one of the things that we try to do as an organization is to educate patients about things like scientific method and the importance of evidence. But we also provide a forum or a community where our members can share some unscientific evidence, if you will, and that would be anecdotal evidence,
right.
What we call anecdotal evidence. And I myself began a low glycemic index diet and lost all the weight that I had gained and regained, my life back, really. And I have to say, was a poster child for the way that you eat truly does impact and in a fundamental way your entire body, the rest of your health, and that includes all of the hormones.
And what do you feel that there are special challenges with this diet for a woman with PCOS versus somebody else who doesn't have PCOS that is going on the diet for other reasons, or do you think that it's kind of a common challenge for everyone on it?
You know, I don't think there's anything special about having PCOS relative to the low glycemic diet. As a matter of fact, I have found it's an easy and even pleasant diet to follow, and I never feel hungry. And I think maybe in some cases it's a little easier for women with PCOS because we get faster results and we feel so much better, even more so than someone without a problem with insulin resistance that really doesn't see that immediate impact and result.
Now, are you finding that the low glycemic index diet can actually take the place of any medication as well? Some women are on medications typically used for insulin resistance.
Some of our community members have found that all they need to do is to follow a low glycemic diet and an exercise program that also contributes to reducing insulin resistance. Others have combined the insulin sensitizing medications with a low glycemic diet and an exercise program.
So it doesn't seem to be one. It's not the same formula for everybody. People have to sort of pick and choose from different treatments.
That's correct. And you know, certainly there are varying degrees of PCOS and of the insulin resistance that's underlying. So some women need a little extra help than others.
Now, when you went on, women, for example, find that when their insulin levels are in balance, all of the androgen sort of related symptoms, the really unpleasant symptoms such as the hair growth and that sort of thing, can disappear.
Well, some find that they disappear, but one thing that that I learned that I didn't know was that when a terminal hair, what's called a terminal hair grows, that's the hair. You know, you have hair on the palms of your hands that you
right.
can't see, but you also have, in some places on your body, you have thick, dark hair. When that terminal hair is activated, it often doesn't go away by itself, but either laser hair removal or some of the other techniques can clear the area, and if you get no new growth, you can tell that your testosterone levels have decreased significantly.
Okay, so in other words, once you treat it cosmetically, whether it's laser, electrolysis, whatever, that goes away. But in other words, you're not seeing new growth, and that androgenic sort of the androgenic side effects begin to dissipate once your insulin levels are in check.
They do.
And so similarly, women who are experiencing alopecia or the female pattern baldness, would their hair begin to come in once their mm-hmm. insulin? Oh, we're gonna actually take another break now. My guest is Christine Desarn, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association. For more information on PCOS, you can visit pcosupport.org. If you're considering treatment for PCOS, we suggest starting with a low glycemic index diet and the PCOS Diet Cookbook. The book is authored by PCOS expert Dr. Nadir Farid and culinary expert Noreen Gillitz. When we come back, we're going to actually talk about adapting recipes for the low glycemic index diet with Noreen Gillis, who is the co-author of the PCOS Diet Cookbook. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit yourhealthpress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you ever wondered where diseases come from or why you have gotten sick? Imagine one day in the future you will be able to discover from a small sample of your blood whether you're at risk for cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, cancer, or other chronic diseases. That may be much sooner than you think. Tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Integrative Medicine with Dr. Joe Veltman. You will learn about traditional and non-traditional healing modalities used in integrative medicine, as well as suggestions on how to improve your health and how you can co-create a healing environment with your healthcare professional. So get in touch with your health and listen to Integrative Medicine with Dr. Joe Veltman, Wednesdays at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Growing Up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Muzica, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Muzica broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
When you combine energy secrets from ancient China and the latest breakthroughs in medicinal science, you get Power Healing with Dr. Shah. Heard every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Each week, Dr. Shah will bring you another step closer to the expanding world of body space medicine. You will quickly learn and appreciate how Power Healing is a perfect alternative to hospitals and expensive drugs. Take a step beyond modern medicine every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time with Dr. Shah on Power Healing, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Mental illness will touch 50% of us either personally, in a loved one, family member, or close friend. The recognizable lexicon of disorders includes depression, anxiety, brain injury, bipolar disorder, attention deficit disorder, and schizophrenia. But what does it all mean? On Psychiatry, Ask the Expert, hosted by Dr. Neil Kay, Dr. Kay explores the inner workings of the brain and mind, from proper diagnosis to treatment of the behavioral, cognitive, and emotional aspects of mental illness. Renowned board-certified psychiatrist and mental health expert, Dr. Kay addresses these issues of the most common illnesses facing us in today's fast-paced, stress-filled, challenging world. Psychiatry, Ask the Expert, broadcasts each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Tired of life working out the exact same no matter how much you try to change it? It's time to get a new perspective. Perspectives, Alternatives for Living Life Better, with host Margie Sugarman, clears the cobwebs of confusion and offers practical solutions to life's issues. Broadcasting every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel, clinical social worker and psychotherapist Margie Sugarman is here so you can make the right physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual choices for your life. Right here on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 1-866-369-3742. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health and our discussion of PCOS with Christine Desarn, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association. And we've just been joined by Noreen Gillis, who's the co-author of the PCOS Diet Cookbook, Delicious Recipes and Tips for Women with PCOS on the Low GI Diet. So Noreen, welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. Nice to be with you again.
We've been, so Christine and I have been talking all about PCOS and how this is a condition that the medical community now agrees can pretty much be treated with, guess what, diet and lifestyle changes.
Like everything else.
Like everything
the
else.
The magic bullet.
I wanted to just ask you some questions about low GI eating and what you feel are some of the the top five, you know, sort of tips to remember in terms of shopping for a low GI diet and that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, the first thing I find works very well is to base your diet and base your cooking on vegetables and fruits, and that works really, really well, particularly not to use processed because you don't know what the manufacturers are putting into prepared products. So even if you do simple, quick, easy cooking, keep it very basic, add lots of flavor with lots of herbs. You're going to get pretty well all your vegetables and all your fruits usually have good fiber in them, usually a couple of grams of fiber automatically per serving, and that's going to help you through. You're better off in terms of potatoes. If potatoes are one of the quicker carbs, and what I recommend is using a sweet potato versus a regular potato. Although they're not even sure about the sweet potato content right now. They say different varieties have different glycemic index response. But basically they find new potatoes will work better, the little baby new potatoes. Also, potatoes have been boiled ahead of time, and if they are refrigerated, it seems to cut the glycemic response. Another thing that works well is adding some acid when you're preparing things. So usually some lemon juice or some vinegar So that should be in your shopping cart as well. You don't have to worry too much about your proteins. I still choose the healthier ones. You try to keep off the saturated fat just to keep your heart healthy. So I would recommend, fish, particularly cold water fish like salmon, sardines, etc. Even herring is okay, although it's a little bit on the salty side, but those have the good omega-3s and they're still protective and they're automatically, because they're a protein, they're lower, the glycemic index doesn't really cause any concern there. The concern is from carbohydrates. If you're taking breads, you want to have a whole grain bread. I think for any of your grains, you have to look for the word whole grain. The manufacturers get what's called a buzzword, and they decide, okay, fine, 3 servings of grains a day. It's a good way for them to put income into their companies. So you have to really be careful. So I think it's also important to learn how to read a nutrition label. The nice thing about it is fresh fruits and vegetables do not require nutrition labels. So I don't know if I counted to 5 or not.
Now, one of the tips that I wanted to go into was also on a low GI diet. For example, we can have rice, we can have pasta, mm-hmm. we just have to have certain kinds.
Right.
And apparently, rice is a whole rice is a whole universe unto itself. Do you have any suggestions for low GI rice?
Mm-hmm. I usually would use a basmati rice, which will work very well. A brown basmati rice is also excellent. Wild rice is very, very good. To cut the cooking time on rice, if you actually soak it, usually you overnight, so one cup of rice is 2 cups of water. If you just soak it off and then drain it and just add the water back in, it will take half the time to cook. So that will speed things up for people. Oh, I forgot about beans, which are really, really important, very heart-friendly. Very glycemic index friendly, and barley is one of those good foods as well that you want to talk about. And in terms of pasta, try to use a whole grain pasta. The only problem is sometimes it's a little bit more expensive, but I think the costs are coming way, way down. So preferably a whole grain. And also if you cook it al dente versus mushy.
Right, right. I've heard that for example, people who are dining out on a low GI diet will find, they can go to Italian restaurants, they just have to order things al dente.
And the other thing that I suggest is adding lots of vegetables and adding protein. So if you end up, let's say, with a cup of pasta instead of maybe 3 cups of pasta, so a smaller amount of pasta and then supplement it with some protein and vegetables, that will fill up your plate. Because you really want to have a nice full plate. You don't want to feel that you're being deprived. So I think it's just a matter of changing the balance and not having so much starch. I think we've become very accustomed to, looking for the starch fillers that we want to have on
right.
our plate.
And one of the things about your cookbook that I understand is still in production, but will be out soon, is that you have a number of desserts, for example, or dishes that are made with regular flour, but because you've balanced out the various ingredients, it actually comes out to a low GI value
because of oatmeal
and fruits and things like that.
Well, fruits are low GI, so are actually low to medium, pretty well medium, and so because they will balance out. Things that have fruit in it will be high in fiber, will be very good. Very often, I'll add oats. As part of the flour, and that again will slow it down a little bit. Using half whole wheat flour for part of the flour in a recipe, and watching your portion size, that's another key factor.
Now, Christine, just to bring you into this conversation, you've been on this diet for quite some time now, is that correct?
That's right. I started following a low glycemic index diet in 1997.
Oh, okay. So what are some of the things we've been discussing, are there any pitfalls you wanted to point out or additional tips?
Well, one of the most important things that I discovered was that you can't skip breakfast.
Uh-huh.
I agree.
You have to eat a good breakfast with protein in it, and that will stick to your ribs and fuel your morning. And It's just one of those things that I learned the hard way.
What do you typically eat for breakfast?
I'm an egg person, but I usually use egg whites and vegetables like spinach or mushrooms along with that. And I like a good oatmeal toast. I found a local bread with oatmeal in it.
Where time has zipped by, but we're going to unfortunately have to end the show. I want to thank both our guests today, Christine Desarne, founder of the Polycystic Ovarian Syndrome Association, which you can access at pcosupport.org, and Noreen Gillis, co-author of the PCOS Diet Cookbook, Delicious Recipes and Tips for Women with PCOS on the Low GI Diet. The book is published by Your Health Press, and will be available on Amazon later this year, but it can be ordered in the meantime at yourhealthpress.com. Next week, we'll devote our show to the topic of preventing menopause. Can you prevent it, and why should you? Tune in to find out more. You can visit me online at sarahhealth.com, and remember, you are not alone.
Thank you for listening to Sarah Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.